You may like to turn in your Bible to the book of Exodus, if you would. Exodus chapter 19. And you remember in our exercise in the light of Jeremiah that we're looking at chapter 30, chapter 29, the false prophets have been rebuked and judged, the ones that are in Jerusalem, and especially the ones in Babylon. And they're all giving the wrong message that is opposite of what God is saying by way of Jeremiah. And therefore, up at this point, we're in the time of Zedekiah, and in the process, the Nebuchadnezzar's coming, the next event. So there are no more kings in Judah. So in the process then, he rebukes clearly, and then he takes a moment and, having admonished all these years to the city of Jerusalem and Judah and Benjamin, all these years, he puts it down and says, specifically, chapter 30, I want you to write it in a book. I want you to write down what I'm going to tell you. In other words, I want to affirm that which is going to happen. I want you to affirm the trouble that's going to happen. I want you to confirm the triumph that's going to come. In the midst, no doubt at all, affirmation, no doubt, it's going to happen. And you guys can't see if it's not going to happen, but what then? I want to confirm in the light of question or doubt what is surely going to happen afterwards, which is triumph. Now, so having said that, it's Jacob's trouble. And without going there for time's sake, starting to get some help, understanding what is happening specifically in the tribulation. Exodus chapter 19. And you'd recall Israel is at Mount Sinai, and God tells them by way of Moses the wonderful, wonderful privilege. He has brought them out of Egypt to enjoy his awesome person. So when you come to Exodus chapter 19 and verse 4, ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians in the Red Sea, and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself here at Mount Sinai. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice, and indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be as a peculiar, special, prized, privileged people, treasure unto me, above all people, for all the earth is mine. And, verse 6, you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. God made a wonderful promise. They have left Egypt. They're at Mount Sinai, and all they've known is slavery and turmoil and trouble in the sense of being in Egypt all these years. And God offers them a wonderful, wonderful promise, a wonderful, wonderful position. He does it in his grace to be the prized trophy, the people, the nation among all nations, that they would be a special people having a special relationship to God. So he made this awesome promise. And Deuteronomy 7 will say it again, but enough there. Now, having said that, so here we are looking, and Israel is given this awesome promise. What did they have to do to enjoy? Verse 4, 5, and 6. What did they have to do? Zero. All they had to do is receive it. Grace. God gave it. And that's all they had to do, was receive his gift, his grace, his promise, and God would give it. Wonderful. But the human nature, what it was at that point especially, it didn't want to do that. So therefore, when you come to verse 8, as you would remember, all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. So, what was their response to this wonderful gift of grace? "We'll do, God, we'll do. You tell us what you want. We're here. You got us over here. And you tell us what you want, and we'll do it." That's works. We're going to do what you want us to do, all by our lonesome. We'll just be do what we do. You tell us what you want, and we'll produce it. We'll do it. We'll make it happen. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, I'm going to travel 40 years down the road forward, 40 years. Go over with me to Deuteronomy and chapter 5. Remember the book of Exodus. I got to hang on to that. In the giving of the law is given because they didn't believe. They wouldn't receive the promise. They wouldn't receive the gift. The gift is given. They wouldn't receive it. You tell us what you want, and we'll earn it. We'll somehow be what you will be what you want us to be without you. And of course, that isn't true. So, and that's why the law is given. The law cannot save anybody. The law only condemns and becomes the jailer, like in for Israel, to harness them, to keep them in check. So they're trying to keep the law so they don't get tied up into idolatry. That was the purpose, among other things. So the law comes along, and that's because it works. Works. You got to have the law. We'll do everything it says. So here's the Ten Commandments. Do them. Go do the Ten Commandments. And you can't do them. You can't do them. When you sit down, you can't do it. Because you can't, with all your heart, don't do much of anything. Because your heart's divided all over the place, as we've shared. Now, having said that, chapter 5, 40 years later, I'm looking at Israel. And they're going to cross the Jordan, remember. And in chapter 5, picking up, please, in verse 27. And you'll note, in the light here, that it's talking about the Ten Commandments when they were given, and the people heard the voice of God, etc. And they were afraid, verse 25. "Now therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us, if, not the fire, if we hear the voice of the Lord our God anymore, then we shall die." So it isn't the fire. It's the God who's using the fire. That's the problem. So now, verse 27. "Go thou near," this is what tell Moses, "go thou near," and this is the recording of the Ten Commandments, only 40 years later, telling you details. Verse 27. "Go thou near and hear all that the Lord our God shall say. Speak thou unto us all that the Lord our God shall speak unto thee, and we will hear it and do it." We'll do it. We're going to do it. So they haven't changed. In 40 years, they haven't changed. They're the same. Now, having said that, and going along if I can, and thus in verse 29, their problem, as you know, we've said it. Verse 29, "Oh, that God said," this is chapter 5, 29. "Oh, that there was such an heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." They had no heart. That was the problem. They were missing the heart. They needed to have the heart. And without the heart, you aren't going to go anywhere. Because it's just your flesh, your will, your determination, but can't go anywhere. You don't have. In other words, you can't, you're only so big, so large, so what? You can't be more than that. You can't reach up and touch the ceiling. No matter how you try. And you can sit and wave your hand and push, but you can't do it. You're limited to the little and the light, little persons that we are. We're limited to our humanness and our little world that we try to live in. Now, having said that, keeping that in mind, they had no heart. So therefore, I'm going to jump back where God said something else that helps us. In chapter 4, remember in verse 27, 4 and 27, and the Lord shall scatter you among the nations. They're going to be Assyrian captivity, Babylonian captivity. And ye shall be left few in number among the heathen, the nations, whether the Lord shall lead you. And there you shall serve serve gods, idols, idolatry, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. In other words, they're just a piece of wood, totem pole that can do nothing, Buddha that can do nothing. That's all. Now, so therefore, verse 29, but if from thence, when you're scattered, when you're in trouble, when you're in turmoil, but if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him. What are the conditions? If you seek him with all your heart, with all your soul. They had no heart, that's the problem. What are you looking for, God? A heart. I'm looking for you to be on the same page. Now, having said that, that, as you know, verse 30, since they're going to be scattered, since they need to seek God with all their heart, verse 30, when thou art in trouble, tribulation, and all these things are come upon thee, even in the latter days, not now, but way into the future, if thou turn to the Lord thy God and shall be obedient unto his voice, verse 31, for the Lord thy God is a merciful God. He will not forsake thee, nor destroy thee, nor forget the covenant of thy fathers, which he sware unto them. God is going to be consistently faithful. So they're told that they're going to do what they're going to do by their works, and they're going to do it. And so therefore they're going to do, that's what they're going to do. They're going to keep doing what they do. Instead of trusting God's promise by grace, as a nation, they are not going to do that. So now, another part of the piece that help us with the tribulation is the Gentiles. So Israel, how is Israel going to be reached by the tribulation? Jacob's troubles. That's why they're Israel. Jacob's. It's a time of Jacob's trouble. But the Gentiles, therefore, over to Numbers, chapter 23. And you would recall how did God go? Well, let me read this part first. Chapter 23, Numbers, verse 9. For Mrs. Balaam the prophet, and from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, what do you see? The people of Israel, the people of God. The people shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned. The word reckon means to bind together, to tie in a knot. Think of tying something in a knot. Tie in the knot. They shall not be reckoned, tied in a knot. Israel would like to be tied up with the nations. They would like to be like the nations. Remember 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 5. What do they say to sin? We want to be like the nations, not a nation. We want to be like all the other guys. And we want a king like all the other guys have. That's what we want. That's what we want, a king like them. We want to be like them. That's what they wanted. Now, that's in Samuel. What can we do? Well, the Gentiles are going to come along in the process, and Israel, anti-Semitism, etc. Israel as a nation, historically, can never, in the UN, can we get into the UN? No. Can we get into, we're going to be scattered, Titus 70 AD, all over the place? Can we go and get absorbed in the United States? No, we're always Jews. We have a Jewish community. We have now the rising up, understandably, at the end here, of anti-Semitism. It's rising up. Jews, they can never fit in. They can never get in. God said they're mine. You understand? They don't belong to anybody else. They can never be anybody else. They do Exodus chapter 19, 4, 5, and 6. They are a special people. They're a holy nation. They can't be anybody's. Hang on. Now, so God, you're going to go and scatter them by the Gentiles, and the Gentiles are going to be used to go and judge them. And by the way, that word reckon that you're looking at in chapter 23:9 is reflexive. It would be they themselves would like to get tied up, not the Germans or the Greeks or the Americans or the Italians, not they. No, they aren't. The aggressor to make this union are the Jews. They're looking to fit in. They want to fit in. They can't seem to ever get fit in. Now, so having said that, here's the Gentiles. The Gentiles are used to punish them, to punish them. And so as we go through history, God used the Egyptians to raise up a nation 400 years. The Syrians, the Babylonians, and all of them, he uses them. But in using the nations that are ungodly nations, they aren't godly. They aren't interested in God. They're idolatrous. They're the god of this world, Satan. He's the boss. God uses them as a spanking to awaken Israel, to judge Israel, to do so. The Assyrians, the Babylonians. When we come to the Babylonians, Gentile judging, and by the way, we can turn there. Over to Jeremiah and chapter 25. I want you to have something behind every to stand on. Jeremiah 25. Picking up, please, in verse 11. And the whole land, this is, remember, we did all these things. And for 25, Jeremiah 11. And this whole land shall be desolate and an astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, the whole Babylonian nation, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it perpetual desolations. Chapter 27. In other words, I'm going to punish the guy that was punishment. I use the paddle, Nebuchadnezzar in this case, and Nebuchadnezzar over paddles. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't honor my people. And they go in after them, as it were. And the people get absorbed. Most of the people that were in captivity in Babylon never went back to the land. Only 70,000 or whatever went back. Because they found a home. And in idolatry, that's where they found a home. In idolatry. So here, God, you judge them. That's right. All over the place. But here in chapter 27, in 27, verse 7. Let me get there myself. 27 and verse 7. And you'll pick it up. All nations shall serve him, Babylon, and his son. This is Nebuchadnezzar. All nations shall serve him and his son and his son's son until the very time of this land's come, until the time of his land come. And then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of Babylon. And the Media Persia comes in, and then you go down the line. What happens now? The Gentiles are on top. Israel's down in the bottom. Israel's no more the nation. It's just a flunky, a nation that's down in the bottom, failing and not fulfilling its wonderful promise. So now, having said that, as it's down in the bottom, in the light of all of that, and they want to be like the other nations, and that's what, remember, they want to be like the other nations. They don't want to be like God would have them be, special. They didn't want God. So, what are we going to have? Well, is Israel, remember what you read in Deuteronomy chapter 4? Verse 28, anyway, if you seek me with all your heart, you'll find me. But here's the Babylonian captivity, and apart from a little remnant trying to do it, and then they, not the whole remnant did it, think of Malachi, and it ends negatively. So when we come, all we got here is this remnant, and Israel wants to be like the other nations. That's what they want. So here they are in Jerusalem in days of Neo and Darius the Mede and all of that. And there they are, and they're going to be there. And so when are they going to say with all their heart? Well, they didn't say it yet, and they didn't say it yet, and they didn't say it yet. So we go over to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel and chapter 2. Chapter 2 and 31. Now they aren't saying, they're going to go with all their heart, but where's their heart? No, it isn't with God. So, here's all the Gentiles. And so we go. A great image, Daniel chapter 2, verse 31 all the way. And each Media Persia and Greece and Rome, etc., etc. They all line up. Wow. Where's the heart? No heart. No heart. Now, Christ is crucified, and if you remember what they said, we have no king but Caesar, so we haven't changed. When are you going to give your heart to God? When are you going to turn? Not yet. What do we know from Deuteronomy chapter 4? It's going to take tribulation. So therefore, Christ is crucified. The next thing that should happen, tribulation. But God is stopping for this little bit of time, approximately 2,000 years. Here we are. Here we are. And God was crucified. And he, remember the world? The world has an empty tomb. And he said, the only sign I'm going to give the whole world is an empty tomb, Matthew chapter 12. That's all I'm going to give them. And I'm going to show it by my church, the believers, that are going to be indwelt in a special relationship to God. Hang on to that. We can't get that now. But a special relationship to God. And that's what it's going to be. When I'm done with a special relationship, showing my grace, when I'm finished with my grace, I'm going to take them up, called the rapture. I'm going to take them. And then I'll commence the tribulation. But it isn't yet, because I'm bestowing grace. But that's unbelief. Where's your heart? Not yet, not yet. Israel, where's your heart? Not yet, not yet. What's it going to take? It's going to take the tribulation. So Daniel chapter 2, and you know without ever enjoying all that truth, verse 44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven, this is 2 and 44. In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all the nations, kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. God is going to come, and the stone, and the end of verse 45, what shall come to, and king, what, to the king, what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream, all of the dream, all of the verses, all the statements, is certain, and interpretation, I'm telling you what it is, it's for sure. It's for sure. Absolutely for sure. It's going to happen in an awesome, awesome way. It's going to happen. So God, what are we doing? We're waiting for the heart. So you want to know why the tribulation? Because Israel hasn't got a heart yet. Why the Gentiles are going to get clobbered? The Gentiles are judged in the tribulation. Why are the Gentiles judged? Because they're shaking their fist at God and chasing Israel. And it's war. They're on a collision course with God. That's where we're headed. And just grace, this little spot that we're living in, waiting. That's what happened. So, but the Gentiles, it's a judgment of the Gentiles and the judgment of Israel. And Israel is going to get saved by the tribulation. So, having said that little bit, and keeping that in mind, so the world, the promise, God's wonderful promise by way of grace, his promises plan, is by way of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promise. Who'd you make the promise to? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You made it to Adam and Eve, Genesis 3:15, and then they followed Abraham, believed God, etc., counted to him for righteousness, and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And Jacob, out of Jacob, comes the 12 sons, 12 tribes of Israel. Why is it called Jacob's trouble? Because they're out of Jacob. It's the trouble for Israel. And to see that a little bit, if you like, over to Isaiah, since they're already doing that. Isaiah and chapter 41, you'll see it. All kinds of ways to do it, but here's one. Why is it called, why is Israel Jacob's trouble? Chapter 41 of Isaiah in verse 8. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, sliding down to verse 13. For I, the Lord God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. And how do you reckon to Israel? Fear not thou, worm, Jacob, and ye men of Israel, I will help thee, saith the Lord, and the Redeemer, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, thou worm, Jacob. Jacob's the centerpiece, not Abraham. Abraham's the promise. What's Jacob? Jacob was going from one trouble condition, he went from one trouble to another. And that's what he did. That's how Jacob went. And Jacob had to learn. Why Israel? Jacob represents Israel, the 12 sons of Jacob. Now, having said that little bit and keeping that in mind, so we have works. That's where the works come from, by the way, of Israel in particular. And they have works. And so we're going to do it by works. And to add to that, well, what are the Gentiles? It isn't works. It is, they're going to be judged by works. But what about Israel? What's different with Israel? With the Gentiles. Over, if you would please, to that which you're familiar with. Romans in chapter 1 for a moment. And you'll see it. Romans chapter 1. What about Gentiles? And you'll recall, may go directly in the light of time in that, in all of that. Go directly, if I can, to verse 20. The invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, his eternal power, and Godhead, deity, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Trinity, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, but became vain in their imaginations, etc. So when they knew God, they changed God. And remember up in verse 19, because that when that which may be known of God is manifest in them. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate, unapproving. They wouldn't approve, unworthy. They wouldn't judge. Their judgment was terrible about it, to do those things which are not convenient or fitting. They didn't want to know God. Works, people do works to get to God, and you find it. But when you get away from the Christian influence, and biblical influence, what do we have? No God. We have religion. We don't want God. God's an awesome person. We don't want to know him. So that's the world. They're the Gentiles. They don't want to know. God's knowable. They don't want to know. So that's where you got. That's where you're at. Now, having said that, keeping that in mind, so here, why are tribulations going to judge the Gentiles? That's right. They're at war with God. That's why they're going to go after God. And the Jews are going to get clobbered in the tribulation because they wanted to be like the other nations. So they're going to get clobbered. So the tribulation has to be. It has to be. What's the Jews, in Jeremiah's day, they don't want to believe. They want to keep Jerusalem. They want to make everything hunky-dory, whatever it is, and keep it all going, whatever. And we're going to be Jews forever. And what are the Jews today? Unfortunately, without tribulation, the Jews are satisfied with being less than Jews, as it were. They're satisfied. No temple, no sacrifices, no priest, no God. And even the city, you know, all those things. They don't even believe the Bible. They read it, they don't believe it. Wow. I remember them telling me, not this, you don't need that. Anyway, now, having said that little bit, now, would you tell, and to add to that, so if you didn't get that little bit, what about the Gentile worlds? The God of this world, Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 3. The God of this world, and 2 Corinthians 4 and 3 and 4. The prince of the power of the air, that's the devil. He's the boss of this nation. Are we surprised then? No. That they don't want to know God? No. Because the devil, Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13 and 14, wants to be what? Like God. 2 Thessalonians, as we're coming to the end here, what can we look in the pointing to the tribulation? 2 Thessalonians 2 and 4. I want to be able to be like God and sit in the temple as God. That's what he wants. So are you surprised that the statement, the world doesn't care about God? Because the God of their God doesn't care about that God. Religion, you can be up to here. That's fine. Be religious. Be zealous. Go kill people for your religion. Muslims. But don't believe in God. Don't do it. Now, so we got the tribulation. Now, to apply it, that's what I want to get to. Now, so in the process, what was missing for Israel? Here's Israel in the days of Jeremiah, and they were not exercising. They have had 605, 597. Nebuchadnezzar has taken captives, emptied the city of gold and stuff, everything, the temple. And here we are going down. And here we are, captives. And 596 is coming, 86 is coming. As we're going now down the corridor, are the Jews, they have, then they have less, and they're going to have less, and having less? Are you guys waking up? Are you guys understanding? No. No, they don't want to understand. They don't want to understand. God has said very clearly, the tribulation is going to come. He's told them repeatedly that Nebuchadnezzar is going to do what he's going to do. So it isn't a surprise. There's no big surprise to them at all. They should know it, but they don't want to know it. They don't want to have it in their experience. Now, without, I don't want to, time's going. With the, keep in mind, in the process, all of us would understand that we're going to die apart from God's grace. True? I bet you not one of you, if I make you think about it, you have to die. You're destined to die. No matter how you cut the cookie, you're going to do it. That's, you know that, but you don't want to know that. We know something, and then that should govern us. Israel should know Nebuchadnezzar's coming. They should act appropriately, but they don't. They know, but they don't want to know. People don't want to know stuff that they do know. They know it, but they don't want to know it. You can get sick. There's nothing wrong with getting sick. You have to get sick somehow in some place just to be part of us all. And now in the process, wow. So God, here we are looking. And they didn't want to experience in their heart and mind a good, objective understanding of where, what history is about and where it's going. That's why Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 2 in that. Write it in a book so they can read it. So if they don't want to remember it, that I said it to them, they can read it. I'm going to do it. Affirmation. It's going to happen. Without any doubt. It's going to happen. To accept the pattern, to accept what's happening, that's what we need to do, to understand that. And to exercise that in a most awesome, awesome way. Now, having said that, and keep in mind, if you can, the studies we did, exercises on the lot and the lap. The lot is cast into the lap and the whole disposing judgment is God's. Think of those messages, because all of that is piling up here. So what we're doing. Now, so God, what do we do? Well, am I going to have, in my experience, am I going to be realistic in my living, knowing what I do know, what I should know? God, may I count the days? You count my days on earth. I count them. You count them because they are numbered. I want to understand that. What does that do? That gives us an exercise to be a little more thoughtful about things and what we're doing because our days are numbered. That's just being wise. Wow. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, if you would, so that we're looking to God to deal with us in a most wonderful way. Now, Over, if you can, to Romans, since you're maybe still there. Why not? Romans in chapter 5. And Romans in chapter 5, keeping in mind God's wonderful, wonderful exercise, he exercises us. Why do we exercise? Israel was exercised, but they didn't learn a thing. So we're exercised. You get sick, you have trouble. It's because you're in the world, you're in this body. And God told you he's going to exit you out of the body at any moment. Now, that's something I should be in my head. I'm expecting, you're expecting to be exited. So the trial, what makes me conscious of that? I get the flu and all of these different things. All the troubles and everything, we did all those the study together. Wow. And that helps us, doesn't it? Haven't you forget the COVID or whatever it is. The flu is worse than that. It can be worse than that. So now, do you get the flu? I hate taking time. The flu. You get the flu. And you get the flu where it's very flu-y. And you get sick. And everything. And you get beat up inside. Now, and but you feel not good. How's that? You don't feel good. After about 3 days of that, you aren't feeling good. I don't care who you are, you aren't feeling good. And I give you my special pill. This is a pill I made in Ethiopia. And I made it, and here it is, special pill. So you take the pill, and within 1 hour, your stomach is healed better. You know, every cough, everything is better. Are you glad you feel better? Do you recognize the difference between being sick and now feeling better? Do you recognize it? Are you thankful for that? Sure you are. And then 2 days later, you forgot what it was to be sick and to be good, to feel good. On the third day, you aren't enjoying the third day like you did the second day, because it's sort of, oh, I just feel normally like I do, so I feel good. And you forgot God, so we get sick again. For what? To remember. Because we keep forgetting. We're short-lived, our time on earth. The realities, the awesome realities of government and socialism and all that's happening, all that's going to happen, the all that's happening. And the church is what? All they are is in the, all we believers, now that we're saved, we're in the middle of the world showing God's wonderful saving grace. How am I going to get out of this system, this sickness? I got to get saved and come to God as my Savior. I got to do that. That's the only safe place. That's what God did, and God's trying to tell me that. But no, I'm going to try to fix it out here. No, I have to get saved, and look to God. I need to do that. So when I do that, over to Romans. I hope you got a little bit. I'm wondering, but trying to help you understand the realities. They're all there. We just don't put them together. We don't. And we don't reap the benefits of the realities. Israel was not reaping the benefits of the tribulation of Nebuchadnezzar's going to level the city, and they weren't reaping the benefit. And here we are in this particular state, in this particular global situation, including our country. Romans chapter 6, a word, we'll just have to do it and close. Romans chapter 5, what was Israel missing? They were missing an experience, to experience the truth. The prophets were wrong. I'm conscious of the prophets. I'm conscious of what God's doing. I'm conscious, back to us, not just back there. We're conscious of our country. We're conscious of what's happening. We're conscious of it. We aren't being blind. We're being objective about it, looking at it, seeing it. And it governs how we do things and why we do things, so we don't get caught up in the system trying to survive like Israel did. So chapter 5, and if I can, verse 2, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace, wherein we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. That's what God's trying to get them to see in Jeremiah. You want to be full of hope. I affirm to you it's going to happen. I confirm to you that you're going to win because you don't believe it. So I'm going to confirm it. And he's going to give three chapters to tell you I'm going to confirm it. Wow. Now, so therefore, in verse 3, not only so, but we also in tribulations, also knowing the tribulation worketh patience, bearing up under the load. And patience bearing up under the load and circumstances produces experience. And that's what we're looking at, experience. The wonderful, wonderful test, testing, proving, approving. To go through and approve. I'm going to be back in Jeremiah. Am I approving? I'm with Jeremiah next to him. He's over here. Jeremiah looks at me and wants to know, am I approving of how it's going and how it's going to go in the light of its outcome? Am I experiencing, I'm actually approving it in my brain and heart? I approve what you're doing, God. I approve how it's going. I approve it. I'm with you, God. Experience. I want to experience what's happening, where it's going, and I want to be approving it with God. I read, I look at my world around me, newspapers, radios, everything, all of it's there. I approve, God, of where it's going. I'm looking to you, God. I'm approving it. Because it has to be for your soon return. Even so, come, Lord Jesus. Huh? Experience. I'll finish. I didn't mean to. And verse 4. Patience bearing up under the load. Experience. And experience produces hope. And you get all excited because you're going to the next thing. You're moving down the corridor to the next thing. You aren't stuck back here. You're moving. You're moving. You're moving. Whatever's going on at the moment, you're moving. You're moving. That's what you're doing. Hope. I'm traveling. I'm moving to the next thing, the next thing. Wow.